What is this entity called Western Media? By and large, Western media is rarely in good order in India. Almost always, government of the day or supporters of the government of the day seem to blame the Western media, just as they also seem to blame the Western powers for everything that's wrong in the world. They tend to blame the Western media for misreading India, if not deliberately maligning or bad-mouthing India. This has become a lot more pronounced under the Modi government because the so-called Western media has been very critical. They've been reporting a lot of the stories. Frankly, a lot of those are stories that many in the Indian media would rather not report, either because they like the government too much or the government likes them too much, or because they worry about the consequences. So a lot of critical voices, a lot of critical reporting has come from what is called as Western media. Now, what is Western media? Western media essentially means media that comes out of the free democracies, most of which exist in the Western world, particularly in English language. So it's US, it's the US, it's Britain, essentially those two. And then there are others also. So all criticism is then blamed on Western media and its biases. And the second thing then is some specific institutions in this so-called Western media are then blamed. The New York Times, top of the unpops, CNN, BBC, Financial Times, individual journalists in these organizations, Washington Post, and also and particularly so, The Economist. Now, Economist has been very critical of Modi government in India for the past few years. Also, before that, The Economist was not so critical. Economist was optimistic about India. But lately, for the past 3-4 years, it's turned very critical. And that has drawn a lot of resentment from the supporters of Modi government, or voters of Mr. Modi, or supporters of Mr. Modi, who have a very large, in fact, overwhelming presence in our public opinion right now, because Mr. Modi's party right now is very strong. In fact, it's stronger than Congress has been at most times. There might have been times when Congress was stronger, but definitely it's now stronger than any party has been in the past 30, 35 years or so. So, from the same much maligned Western media and The Economist no less, now there is a story that has confused Mr. Modi's supporters, because this story actually once again takes a very optimistic view of India. See the cover headline. So this story actually acknowledges that India not only will this year be the fastest growing large economy, mind you, large economy, it's possible that a small country, say Nepal, for example, in some year can grow in percentage terms more than India. But we are not talking small countries. We are not talking El Salvador, although El Salvador is in news today for all very different reasons. In fact, it is today failing to service its debt because it put too much of its reserves in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin has lost value. It's also a country that made Bitcoin legal tender. But anyway, let's not get distracted. India is a large economy, big economy. It will be the fastest growing large economy in the world. Whether we end up with 8%, which the IMF predicts, 7.2, which the RBI is now saying after revising it downwards because of inflation, we don't know what will happen in the end. But even if we end up at the lower end of the projections, it's quite evident that India will be the fastest growing economy in the world, because the Western economies are slowing down. There is also the impact of Ukraine and Russia, energy prices. And then China itself is struggling. As we know, China is continuing with this lockdown, COVID lockdown in many cities, nearly 30 cities now. And in Shanghai, which is China's powerhouse, the engine of Chinese economy, the lockdown has gone on, it looks like, forever. And it's a very cruel lockdown. So Chinese growth will slow down this year. The Economist also says the chances are that for the next many years, India will continue to be the fastest growing large economy. So even if India averages, say, 7 to 8% growth over the next 5 to 10 years, can you imagine what will happen to India? Can you imagine how much more wealth, how many more jobs will India add in? and also what impact it will have on the global economic system, what impact it will have on the quality of life in India, and also what impact it might have in terms of India's diplomatic and strategic clout. So that is the optimistic side. The same set of stories and the lead editorial also talk about concerns, and concerns are mostly on the side that we also talk about often, which is on the side of social cohesion, that the BJP government under Mr. Modi tends to be very pro-Hindu. There's a marginalization of the minorities, which is unhealthy, which can create centrifugal pressures going ahead. Also, that it's a very strong government, which also likes using its power. And there are concerns that this is a government that can do whimsical things. For example, the demonetization of 2016, which looked like an impulsive decision. It's been proven by history to be that. So there is a concern that when you have an overly powerful government that doesn't listen to any dissent, any counter views, any disagreement, then you might get into an echo chamber. And we've seen strongman leaders across the world now, from Bolsonaro to Erdogan to Putin now, paying, and their people paying, and their countries paying, and most importantly, their economies paying the price for their strongman leaders surrounding themselves with yes men. So these are concerns that the Economist talks about. But interesting thing is, what are the reasons they say India is poised to do so well? So they say there are four pillars on which this new India story rests. And what are these pillars? One, that a vast national market is emerging. Also because GST has come in. Also because a lot of Indian business is done on technology platforms. There's a lot of formalization of India's economy. So as a result of all of that, a great vast national market is coming up. Now, if you ask me, there's still a lot to do there. There are still many gaps. You still have trouble even using one of those fast tags going through toll checkpoints. But this is a work in progress. The movement or the progress is in the right direction. So one, a vast national market is coming up. Two, vast internal migration is taking place. Now, because the national market is coming up, it is helping businessmen create economies of scale, says the Economist. And because there is vast internal migration, so one, people are moving out of sort of wasteful agriculture or agricultural underemployment, because too many of them are sitting on tiny farmlands, not having enough work, but because they don't have anything else to do. So this migration is finding them jobs elsewhere. And because they are available as cheap labor elsewhere, others in other states, entrepreneurs are able to build their own businesses also at a relatively moderate cost. Third, there is the emergence of what the Economist calls as a brash new consumer class. So a lot of the people who become middle class, slightly above middle class, over the past 10, 15 years, they predominantly tend to be voters of Mr. Modi. So that's a brash new class which is willing to spend and which is willing to show off. If you got it, you flaunt it. So they will lead to consumption and they will lead to growth. And finally, because of this growth in India's technology and growth in this new middle class, India is also spawning a new generation of technology tycoons. Tycoons is the word I am using, because these are basically tech entrepreneurs, people who are setting up these startups. India has more than 100 unicorns now. In fact, last week, India reached the number of 100, which makes India number 3 in the world. America, China, and then India in terms of Indian unicorns. Most of these Indian unicorns have been built by Indian minds, Indian entrepreneurship, Indian technology, and with foreign capital. Remember, I said and with foreign capital. I didn't say but with foreign capital, because all capital is good. Money has no color. So it's doubly beneficial to India that all this foreign capital is coming into Indian startups, which are doing very well. So these are the four pillars on which this good India story rests. Now, what are the changes which have built these four pillars? Now, that's also interesting. So first is the creation of a state-funded, that is government-funded technology stack which is available now free to the citizens, state agencies, and to anybody who wants to use it. Aadhaar is one most striking example of this. Now you have a bunch of good people, Indian people in software and technology, mainly working out of Bangalore, and Nandan Nilekani, who in fact, I must disclose, was the first investor in the print. If I grew the courage to launch the print at the young, very young age of exactly 60, Saat, 60, it is owed to, thanks are owed to, gratitude is owed to Nandan Nilekani, who said that you must understand that technology has lowered entry barriers. So an ecosystem has also grown around him. We know that Aadhaar was his creation. And a lot else has happened. So these technology stacks are now available. They are state-sponsored. These are state-sponsored digital services. Everybody has an electronic identity. And also taxation systems, payment systems, all of these, bank accounts, all of this, the economist technologies, is turbocharged also the startup scene. So that's one. But it has done some other interesting stuff. What it has done is the availability of this technology stack has enabled the Modi government to deliver welfare very efficiently to the really poor, to the most poor. Now, I've been talking about it for a long time. In fact, I've been saying it since 2017 because I was picking up these indications in my sort of extensive travels during elections, Uttar Pradesh elections 2017, Karnataka elections. Also, Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, also BJP at that time did not win them clean, Chhattisgarh. But you could see that this welfare from the central government is now reaching more efficiently to the poor than has been the case in the past. And this is being done through what we know as Jam Trinity, that is Jandhan, Aadhaar, and mobile. And this combination of technology platforms and technology instruments has enabled the government to take benefits directly to the really poor in India. It's a lot of poor people. And I don't know what the exact estimates are, exact numbers are. The Economist says that since 2017, more than $250 billion have been delivered like this by way of direct benefits to the poor in a very efficient manner, which I may also describe, if I may add in my little bit, to be friction-free. So what is the friction? The worst friction in a human being's life, in a citizen's life, is the friction in dealing with the government. So when you go to deal with a petty bureaucrat or with the government and say, boss, I am so-and-so, and he says, but what is the evidence that you are so and so? Get some district magistrate or some patwari or somebody or some gazetted officer to put his rubber stamp and also sign it to say that you are a so and so. Bring it in triplicate, get somebody to endorse it. All that is now out because you got your Aadhaar. Identity is there. Second, you don't have to take your invoice or your evidence or whatever to somebody to say, please sanction my money, because I am owed this money by the government. The government promised me this money. But once again, when you go to a small level bureaucrat in your village, then you can go into these multiple layers of bureaucracy. And then arbitrage comes in and bribery comes in. And there is leakage on the way. But if the money is coming straight into your bank account, it becomes, the equation changes. So for the poorest Indians, which is a lot of Indians, this equation has changed. So the Economist estimates the number of these Indians is 95 crores, 950 million, who've got this direct benefit. I can tell you, I've been seeing it, I've been talking about it, and it gets people who don't like Mr. Modi, people who are critics of Mr. Modi, very triggered, right? But at the same time, I've also been pointing out quite strongly the threat that his politics and the BJP's politics today also poses to social cohesion in the country. But the fact is that this has worked. And the Economist also acknowledges that what Modi government has learned right and what they have got right is that when their policies cause economic disruption, all reform will cause economic disruption. When that happens, they also have the ability now, thanks to this technology stack, to provide instant gratification to a mass of voters. And that's very important. Otherwise, this disruption travels down. So if this disaffection or this disruption sort of filters down to the bottom, to the grassroots, it can get your voters angry, and no politician wants that. Now, also look at what's happening in the country. What's happening in the country right now is, one, we've seen all that's working, all that's not working. India has grown in the past 7 years, but the Economist reminds us that while it has grown by 40% net overall in 7 years under Mr. Modi, it could have done better. In fact, China, over a much larger base, a base about five times as large as India's, has grown by 53% in the same period. So India could have done better. But right now, you have a set of some circumstances where India may do better going ahead. Of course, not all of this has happened because India did something or the Modi government did something. Some of it's happened by chance also. For example, India did not create, or Indian engineers or software writers in India did not create the cloud. But cloud has now enabled so many tech-based platforms and businesses. So India can take advantage of it. So when a chance is available, when somebody bowls a full toss at you, you should be there to hit it for a 4 or a 6. So India has taken these chances. The other thing that's happened is, by chance, is the Sino-US split. It's not as if India has caused it. The third thing that's happened now is the Russian invasion of Ukraine. India didn't cause it, but the fact is, this is weakening Russia. This is weakening, in the process, China as well. In addition, there is also accumulated reform. For example, if you look at Aadhaar, if you look at GST, these are not ideas of the Modi government. These ideas have been there for more than 10 years. It's just that the UPA, which came up with these ideas, was not able to implement these. They were not able to get the political willpower or the political muscle or the political energy, or they went into what the Americans might call analysis paralysis. On the one hand, on the other hand, ye ho gaya to phir koi aur ho jayega. So in search for the perfect solution, they lost sight of the good. The Modi government, on the other hand, obviously does not wait for the perfect solution. So that route to growth and progress has risks, but at least you get something done, because once they buy into an idea, they put the full might of the state and the system behind it. The dangers, once again, will come from a politics, an internally divisive politics, which may fray India's social cohesion. Also, an overly powerful government system whereby cronyism can develop. So those are things that are worth watching. But overall, in a world that's getting messier by the day, and that's getting more problematic by the day, India has found a great combination of virtuous factors, or a great deal of wind in its sails.